Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion Medical Insurance for Pets is proud to sponsor Pure Dog Talk. You take every care to give your puppies the best start in life, right? With Trupanion's breeder support program, you can help puppies continue to receive the best. As part of the program, you're able to send your litters home with special offers for immediate coverage to help ease the transition as the puppies adjust to their new home. Should the puppy get hurt or injured, Trupanion will help cover the vet bills so buyers can focus on what's best for their pet. Additionally, there are no limits with Trupanion's coverage. The highest paid claim for a pet on a special offer was over $11,000. Getting started is easy, and there's no cost to you. Click the link on my partner page to join. And don't forget to mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I am always grateful to our wonderful veterinary voice, Dr. Marty Greer, who is so gracious to talk to me at all hours of the day and night, after football games, you name it, man. She's amazing. So thank you.
It's only because my schedule is so bad.
That's okay. It's okay. We all have that same schedule. That's what's terrifying about it, right?
It's the wonderful world of dogs.
Absolutely. And the wonderful world of dogs. And are we ready for it? Poopy happens, right?
Indeed, it does.
And particularly, I wanted to talk about, and you know, so much of what we do here on the podcast is based on Laura had a bright idea about whatever. In this particular instance, it's I went through this with a litter of puppies just recently, and it triggered a thing that said, we need to talk about this. This is something that, you know, not everyone has experienced this, and not everyone has the incredible resources that I have at my fingertips. And so I want to share this with you guys, my listeners. So Marty, thank you so much for bringing your wisdom to us.
Oh, of course. No problem.
Absolutely. So you have baby puppies, and for any number of, I think there's 13 here on my list, reasons, puppies start having diarrhea and bad potty. And this is really dangerous, right? In baby puppies, they can get dehydrated.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting their nutrients. They're not growing, all of this. So let's break it down. Let's talk poopy.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So the danger is dehydration. It's secondary bacterial infections because the bacterial components of the GI tract can penetrate through and get into the system.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, loss of weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole cycle of things start to happen with diarrhea.
Right.
So it's not simple. It's not just a little bit of diarrhea. It really is a big deal. And the younger they are, the more serious it is.
Correct. You have it listed sort of in the things that cause diarrhea. I almost want to talk about it from a, okay, they're a couple days old. Why are they having a diarrhea? They're a week old. Why are they having a diarrhea? They're 3 weeks old. Why are they having, you know, like that is almost, because when we have puppies and they're going along and they're going along and all of a sudden you're like, no.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you, almost every single litter, either the puppies have diarrhea, the mom has diarrhea, they all have diarrhea. At any point during that first 6 to 8 weeks, it's almost inevitable that there's going to be diarrhea.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. You know, when I send home after our C-sections and after females have their puppies, I just automatically send home a couple of items with people because I know they're going to need it. And they look at me and go, really? No, I don't think I'm going to need that.
Yeah, I know you are.
And honestly, if they don't take a probiotic and they don't take home kaolin and pectin,
right,
it's a guarantee that they're going to regret it.
They're going to come back.
Yeah. Or they'll end up someplace in the middle of the night.
And, yeah.
You know, then it gets even more expensive.
Okay, so let's break it down. So the first most common reason that baby puppies up to 8 weeks old are going to have bad potty.
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure I can nail it down to one particular reason. There's several that are pretty common. Overeating is certainly one relatively common cause. If the puppies are just overindulging, they may end up with diarrhea. any time that you do a diet change, which, of course, in the first 2 weeks mm-hmm. you're not going to have, but any time once you start into the weaning process at week right. 3 and 4, a diet change is going to do it. A water change is going to do it. Stress mm-hmm. is going to be a problem. There's bacterial and parasitic causes. Parasites are really common.
Right. And I want to hit on that one hard.
Yeah. Most puppies, if their mother wasn't on an appropriate dewormer during her pregnancy, they're going to end up with parasites. Even before the puppies are old enough to have adult parasites passing eggs in their stool to be diagnosed, you can already find parasites in the puppy's intestines. So by 2 weeks of age, the puppies can have a pretty heavy parasite load. So it's really important we talk about this.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with the easy one, which is overeating, which I personally don't tend to see that when they're nursing. I tend to see that when we start them on kibble of some shape, form, or fashion, or whatever solid food that we're moving them to. And, you know, maybe you've got a little one that's like, oh, hallelujah, I can finally eat, right? And they just gorge right. themselves.
And so that's true, but sometimes we'll have bitches that just really lactate heavily and they have a small litter. And so we'll end up with a problem with overeating. Mm. And when you have a small litter, one of two things happens. Either the bitch doesn't produce enough milk, so you have to supplement because she's just not stimulated adequately to produce milk, or she's got enough to feed the neighborhood. And those right. small numbers of puppies that she has are going to take full advantage of it. So they may be a singleton, they may be, you know, two or three in the litter, and they're going to overeat it. Frequently, that's fairly easy to diagnose because the diarrhea tends to be white in color,
okay.
and it tends to be very hefty puppy for their age and their size.
Right. We had one litter, wire hair pointers, and there was the two little ones that we were always trying to get to eat, and the one, we called him Al the Tick, right? Because he would eat, his little tummy would swell up, and he would look like a tick that was ready to pop,
yeah.
you know?
You will see that sometimes with them when they really do overindulge.
And so then we have the weaning process. So everybody has their own weaning process, whether you're weaning to kibble or weaning to raw, how you do it, all of these things have bearing. What are your suggestions about that transition? Do you talk about probiotics? Do you talk about plain yogurt? What are your recommendations?
I really like the probiotics better that are made for dogs because mm-hmm. they specifically have the bacterial components in it that a dog should have in their gut. So yogurt's okay, but it doesn't have some of the bifidobacteria and some of the other bacterial components that we really like to see in the dog's GI tract. So my preference is to use a good quality probiotic, and that's going to be one of three. That's going to be ProViable, which is Nutramax, Vet, mm-hmm. I'm going to draw a blank on it, but it's Vet something. And the third one is
Fortiflora.
The Purina Fortiflora. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just found out recently, and this is really terrible that I didn't know this before, that the Purina has a beef base to it, but it's all hydrolyzed protein.
Mm-hmm.
So even in a dog that might have an allergic problem with beef, because it's a hydrolyzed protein, mm-hmm. they can tolerate it. So it tastes the best. It's one of the nicest.
Yeah, I've used Fortiflora for almost every single litter when I start weaning. I just mix the Fortiflora into, you know, dump some into the big tub. That it's not scientific, but it works. And then as you start to put, I know, just breathe. But as you start to have individual bowls, then you can worry about giving them each their own dose. But just to get them started as they transition, I have found it to be super successful.
Right. It's great. The third one is Biome Vet Probiotic.
Yeah, there you go.
So we know those three are really good ones. And you want to make sure that you're checking the label. And if it's not on the label, that you contact the company to ask them how many colony-forming units, that's how many bacteria, are present at the time that the product expires. Not at the time that it hits the shelf, but at the time it expires. Because a lot of times those products will deteriorate over the course of time that they're on the shelf. So like a vaccine, you don't want to use anything that's expired for a probiotic.
That's a really good point. I like that one because we don't think about it, right? It's a little powder in a package. It can't go bad. Well, mm-hmm. yes, it can, actually. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Good
yeah,
one.
And then if the numbers of bacteria are too low, then you don't get the full effect.
Mm-hmm. And dietary indiscretion, one would think that that's going to come in that 8-week-old puppy that just can't quit putting rocks in its mouth, right?
Right. That's the most common age that you're going to see it is in the puppies that are weaned and out and about. Not the ones that are still in the whelping box, not the ones that you really can control what's in their environment. But yeah, the leaf, the stick, the dead bird, you know, the goose poop, you know, you name it, if it's out there, your dog is going to find it.
Rocks.
And it's a guarantee that he who eats the fastest gets the mostest. So the faster you run toward the dog to take it out of their mouth, the faster they swallow. So that you are certainly not going to take away this new prized possession that they have.
They actually learn at my house. I teach them because I have pea gravel, which pea gravel, in the scheme of things, even for baby puppies, they can usually manage to handle it. But I don't like them to eat it. So I teach them as baby puppies, come here and show me what you have. So I don't go after them. I sit and call them to me. And after a while, they learn. And I just look at them and they like, they spit it out.
That's pretty good training because that's hard to do. Obviously, you don't have a retriever.
No, I do. I have wire haired pointers. Hello, they retrieve, but they know.
Yeah, but they're not Labradors.
No, they're not Labradors. Labradors are a special. Anybody that has Labradors will tell you. Any of you listeners who have Labradors understand. Labradors are, what is it, the highest incidence of inappropriate things in their stomach surgeries.
Yes. So here's a little hint. If you have a Labrador and they eat bad things, get insurance when they're very young.
Yes.
Because you will definitely benefit from that. It's several thousand dollars every time your dog eats something that has to go to surgery and they have to end up taking out bits and pieces of the dog. So it's a great idea to have that insurance.
And can I say, because Trupanion is my favorite, Trupanion insurance is an excellent choice for those of us who are breeders. Here's your free ad, Trupanion. Those of us who are breeders, we can send our puppies home with it, right? Like, it doesn't cost us a thing. And the minute that puppy leaves our house, it's covered. And it is covered. Yeah. And I've talked to the Trupanion people. They've paid like $10,000 on a puppy that went home on a breeder plan. Like, they haven't even gotten money yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. So you definitely want to be checking out the different insurance companies and what kind of coverage you can get. So those are really great tips for you to have if you've got one of those dogs. That's a tendency to just be a garbage disposal and eats everything that they can get their mouth on.
Absolutely. Clumbers are another one.
Yeah. We've seen broken glass and razor blades. And, you know, if it can go down, they figure out a way to do it. So it can be scary.
Well, and in the scheme of razor blades, right, water change and stress are pretty minimal. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, as a matter of fact, a water change may give you some diarrhea, but I don't think too many dogs are going to get really sick from it.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, stress, you know, anytime that a dog is stressed. Right. So especially when they're going to a boarding kennel or someplace that they've never been.
Sure.
It's a good idea to take along your own food, take along your own water, and include your probiotics at that point as well, because stress is going to definitely be a trigger for those dogs to develop diarrhea.
Right. And we're getting to the ones that I think are the most scary, right? The most dangerous.
Yes.
Bacterial, parasitic, and viral.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that, for me, are terrifying. And they each have, like, their own odor, their own color.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is weird. We're having a poopy happens discussion. I hope y'all are not eating dinner. But this is real.
Right. And especially parvovirus.
Right.
There's a special odor that goes with parvovirus. I learned that my first year out of vet school, actually before I got out, in 1979, parvo started to break.
Yep.
And I graduated in 81, and we would have dogs that came in kidney failure or came into the hospital hit by a car. And because we didn't have vaccine, because we didn't have protection, we would have these dogs that would come in completely unrelated to anything, and adult dogs would get parvovirus and die.
Right.
And in our rotation, in our small animal clinic, if your patient died under your care, you flunked the rotation. So
it didn't matter
that your dog died from parvo, even though it had a broken leg. You were responsible for that dog's death. So it was a really brutal time to be in practice. There was no vaccine. There was nothing we could do for these dogs, and it was really horrible.
That was the time that my family got into purebred dogs, and the very first purebred dog that we got was an English setter, and she came from a parvo litter.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It's disturbing. Yep. And I've actually had one of my own dogs that has died of parvo because of the timing of the vaccine and the timing of the transport of the dog. So it's still out there. It still happens. It's most common to see in either dogs that aren't vaccinated or in the Rottweiler, Doberman, and Pitbull Terrier groups of dogs, but we do still see it in other breeds as well, and it can really sneak up on you and really be terrifying. So one of the things I learned, and I'm going to share with your readers and listeners here that they need to take a look at, is if they live in the country, they need to be aware that raccoons have latrines, and I didn't know this until recently. Raccoons have latrines. And they will travel a long distance over ground to get to that latrine, and it harbors parvo, it harbors lepto, and it harbors parasites as well, like Baleascaris. So it's a really nasty thing. So you want to make sure if you live in the country or have some place that you've got raccoons around that you walk the property, you take out a flashlight, you go out, you investigate it. The Center for Disease Control has an entire web page on how to find and destroy and disinfect a raccoon latrine. So it's something that people need to be aware of if they're having groups of dogs or if they're losing dogs and they can't figure out where parvo is coming from. This is probably the source. So
wow.
It's important.
Wow. That is new information to me as well. Interesting.
Yeah, so we'll make sure that that gets...
Yes,
yeah, we'll put
a link.
On the website.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, and I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know, I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks, is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight-line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included, because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more. And this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow. So bacterial.
Yes.
So more common, probably. I mean, realistically, parvo happens. And we all know somebody, I'm sure, that has dealt with it and has its own color and odor. But bacterial and parasitic, probably more common, would you say?
Yeah, parasites are really common. Mm-hmm. It's estimated that about 95% of puppies have parasites at some point. So if you have a litter of puppies and the bitch wasn't on a dewormer during her pregnancy, and I'll talk about that in a second, then the puppy should start to be dewormed at 2 weeks. So as soon as their eyes open at 2 weeks, so at 2, 4, 6, and 8 weeks, they should be dewormed with a broad-spectrum dewormer. That can be parental, pemoate, it can be Panacure. But it's really important that we get those dogs on dewormers when they're young because, like I said at the beginning, they can have adult parasites in their intestinal tract by the time they're 2 weeks old before you can even start to see the worms pass eggs, because the parasites have to be 3 weeks old to pass the eggs that we can see on the stool sample. So you can have very, very young puppies with heavy parasite loads. Hookworms can cause significant anemia to the point
yes.
that we can lose puppies to anemia. Whipworms can cause significant problems. Of course, and there's Giardia and Coccidia and Cryptosporidium. There's a whole wealth of really nasty things. And a lot of these are contagious to humans as well. So we need
right.
to be careful that we're managing these puppies. We can't be placing puppies in homes with families that may have children, may have people in the family that are elderly or immunocompromised in some way that they could end up picking up a parasite from the puppy and ending up with some health problems associated. So the coolest thing that you can do is from the 5th week of the pregnancy, so 3 weeks before the bitch is due to whelp, through the first 2 weeks of lactation, so for 5 straight weeks, 35 wonderful days, you can put the bitch on Panacure fenbendazole once a day for that 5-week period of time. And by doing that, you interrupt the life cycle of the parasite. So she will not have puppies born with roundworms or hookworms. It's really cool. So if you've been used to seeing puppies pass worms when you start to deworm them at 2 weeks of age, this is a way that you can keep that from happening.
Okay, so talk to us more about that, because I and many of us in my, you know, sort of genre time of life have always heard you can't put any chemicals. Don't put any chemicals in a pregnant bitch. Don't worm a pregnant bitch. Don't vaccinate a pregnant bitch. Don't, you know, any of those things, just like, you know, holy grail, oh, right to the uterus.
Right, Right. So the rule is don't put anything into the pregnant bitch that's not going to improve the health of her or her puppies. And this follows that rule. It will definitely improve the health of the puppies. So like I said, instead of having puppies that are born with parasites already in their intestines, you can interrupt that. Now you can deworm the bitch until hell freezes over and have negative stool samples and still end up with puppies born with parasites because, and this is confusing to people, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to them. But if the bitch had a parasite when she was a younger dog, those will insist in the muscles. They will migrate through the bloodstream, migrate into the muscles, insist just the way that we used to talk about trichinosis in pigs. Mm-hmm. And then the stress of pregnancy and the stress of lactation reactivates the migration so that they're in the bloodstream of the bitch. And that's how they pass through the placenta into the puppies and how they pass through the milk and into the puppies. So the only way that you can interrupt that life cycle is with a 5-week course of Panacure. Fenbendazole,
right.
Safeguard, whatever product you want to call it, it's all right. Fenbendazole.
Okay, that's the important thing that I need people to hear and remember. The bitch passes parasites, worms, to her puppies in the placenta and in the milk. So if the puppies are still nursing, they still are receiving worms from the mother.
Right.
Eggs.
Right. Well, the actual parasite, the larval form of the parasite, yes.
Right.
And then, of course, she turns around and licks up the stool, and so right. then she reingests yeah. the parasite eggs, so yeah. then the cycle starts over. It's a really great system if you're a parasite, because you don't actually kill the patient, but you make them sick. And it's not a cool thing if you're the dog owner. I have pulled roundworms out of the washing machine. You know, they've gone through the laundry. It's unpleasant, let me just tell you.
Not
it's
good.
Unpleasant to find those in your wash. So don't do it.
No. And like I said, having just lived through, long story, but anyway, having just lived through this with a bitch that I was whelping for someone else that was not mine, who was not on my personal worming protocol, and I've got baby puppies that break at 3.5 weeks with bloody diarrhea, sort of, as I said, the trigger for this entire podcast, going, I know there's something wrong. And remembering reading about, you know, hair coat that looked wrong and kind of turned up at the ends that meant hookworms and all of these things. And I'm looking at these puppies going, oh my God, right? Talk to us, if you can, as a veterinarian a little bit, about the horrors of hookworms and some of these parasites on your property.
Right. And once you've got them, they're there to stay. You can't eliminate them. You flamethrowers don't take care of them. I mean,
girl,
you know,
I've tried.
Burn,
I thought about it. I really considered it. It's fire season here.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad choice. We used to have chemicals that we could put on the soil that would kill hookworm eggs, but those went away a long time ago because it was an organophosphate and it was bad for our water supply and bad for us. So those are no longer products that are on the market. And there's very little you can do to kill those parasites. Even the winter in Wisconsin does not kill these parasites when they're in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thing. Once you have it on your property, you're always going to have it. And things like Giardia and Coccidia, it's almost to the point where you expect to see those in puppies.
Right.
It's almost impossible to have puppies without that because they are just that prevalent. And it's very frustrating for people that are trying to raise healthy dogs.
Right.
That the first thing they do is take the puppy to the vet and boom, they show up with either Giardia on the stool sample, Giardia antigen on the SNAP test, or Coccidia on the stool sample.
And how do we treat Giardia and Coccidia for those of us who are listening who might not know the answer to that question?
Sure. And Giardia will respond well to 5 days of fenbendazole, so the same product that we're using for our bitches. Coccidia responds pretty well to Albon. Albon doesn't kill it, but it knocks it down. I personally prefer to use those products. I don't like using Panaziril and Tenaziril and some of those products that are made for horses. The problem being that it's pretty difficult to take a tube of dewormer that's designed for a patient that weighs 1,500 pounds.
Right.
And estimate how much you need to give to a one-pound puppy.
Right.
So I'm personally not a fan of those products because I think they're dangerous in the opportunities to have missed doses occur. And metronidazole, you know, people want to use metronidazole for everything, but again, that's not something that we should be reaching for during pregnancy when the puppies are really young.
Right.
It's easy to develop metronidazole toxicities, so we have to be really cautious with that as well. So fenbendazole and Albon are the two drugs that we tend to use the most commonly in our practice.
Good, good, good. On the viral, we touched on parvo. I think we did pretty well on that. Corona and distemper. I mean, corona we see, and I know it's not part of my core vaccine. Distemper, of course, is, but talk to us about that corona distemper, some of those things.
Sure. And distemper should be in everybody's vaccination protocol.
Yeah.
We rarely see distemper in the northern tier of states. It still shows up on the southern tier from time to time in certain situations. And we do vaccinate routinely for it. And unless you've done a nomogram on your bitch to know exactly when you want to specifically vaccinate your puppies, the general vaccinations should start between 6 and 8 weeks. With distemper, adenoparent influenza, and parvo, repeated every 4 weeks until they get to be 16 to 18 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
So we do recommend strongly that you vaccinate for distemper and parvo. Corona, we don't vaccinate for in my practice. In certain commercial breeder settings where you have corona, it might still be a good idea, but in general, it's not necessary. And the standing line that I hear from Dr. Schultz, the vaccination guru from Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
is corona is a vaccine looking for a disease.
That's kind of how I felt about it. That's why I was curious. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a rare situation that I would recommend corona to be in the vaccination protocol, but distemper and parvo absolutely, hands down, need to be vaccinated for every 3 to 4 weeks, starting at around 6 to 8 weeks of age.
Okay. Okay. So we've covered why we have bad potty in our puppies, and there's a few other ones that are a little more esoteric.
Right. Not so common.
Right. You know, a food sensitivity or any of these kind of things. Diagnosis is pretty easy, right? Like, take the poopy and look at it under a microscope, yes?
Well, that's step one. And then step two is either going to be the SNAP test that gets done in the veterinary clinic or sending the sample out to a diagnostic lab that can also do a PCR or an ELISA test looking for the antigen for the protein of the parasite.
Okay.
Because sometimes they can be very difficult to find mm-hmm. with the microscope, but they are easier to find with PCR or ELISA testing. And of course, then there's the obvious visual inspection.
Yeah.
Looking at the stool. And I will frequently have people that come in with a stool sample and there are tapeworms in the stool sample, but there's no ELISA test for it. There's no PCR test for it. And on flotation, the tapeworm parasite segments are too heavy to float.
Right.
And typically the other things that we see on stool samples are going to be put in a salt solution, centrifuged, and then looked at on a flotation. So we have to look at the stool and see if there's any evidence of a tapeworm, because it's really upsetting to owners if they come in, they bring us a sample, they paid the money for it, and we give them a result that there's no parasite when they know full well that
right.
they saw tapeworm segments.
This is a really great point, and I want to kind of like put a marker here, as they say. Well, you know, because this litter that I'm describing to you, the situation that I just went through, I had 3 stool samples in, and every single one of them came back clear for everything. And yet, as they went on into their homes and this sort of thing, they were positive for hookworm, they were positive for roundworm, da, 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 da. So not every stool sample gives you an accurate reading. I mean, talk to us about that. Speak to that a little bit.
Right. And that happens more often than we'd like to admit.
Right.
It can be that either the parasites are too young to have the eggs. It can be that they're difficult to see. Giardia can be really tough to see on a stool sample. Mm-hmm. Cryptosporidium can be really hard to see. Coccidia, you can pretty commonly find it, but it's not always easy to tell if it's the dog coccidia or if it's just something passing through the GI tract, like a rabbit dropping that they picked up. And
mm-hmm.
it sort of just merrily went through the gut. And it looks like it might be a parasite, but it isn't always. So that's why it's a great idea to have these stool samples sent out to a diagnostic lab where they do the ELISA test, where they have people that spend their entire life sitting at a microscope looking at these parasites instead of your technician that's trying to grab lunch,
right.
run a stool sample,
right.
get ready for the next appointment,
right.
you know, send home the surgery.
Right.
It can be really difficult for accuracy on these stools, and it's really critical, like I said, because of the zoonotic potential for these diseases. We don't want to miss anything. We don't want to misdiagnose or treat for something that we don't need or end up with some other weird parasite like a stomach worm or a lung worm or something, which are very rare, but they do happen.
Okay, that's really good. You know, it's a frustration, right? Because, you know, I'm using my own case study here. I'm looking at these puppies, and I have 40 years of looking at puppies. I'm saying there's something wrong. And I am saying, based on not experience, because I've never experienced hookworms, but based on education and knowledge and learning and reading and, you know, all those years in 4-H and whatever,
yes.
that I think it's hookworms. And finally, I just said, I don't care what the stool sample says. They're getting panicure. That's just all
right.
there is to it.
Right. And it's always a good idea to be really cautious with it. So I would never tell you that it was a bad idea to be proactive about that kind of condition. But it's really common to see these parasites.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've had people put their dogs on the 5-week protocol with the
fenbendazole,
I have had multiple breeders with a number of years of experience that you have come in And they will walk in my door, throw their arms around me and say, Dr. Greer, I have never had such healthy puppies in my 40 years. I can't believe I didn't do this before.
I'm very excited because I have another litter bred. Again, not a bitch that grew up on my property. So, you know, I expect she's in good shape and all the rest of it, but I don't know that for sure. And we're going with this. I am going to personally do a test drive on this. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, good. We'll have a report.
Absolutely. She's 4 weeks pregnant this Friday. So there you go. In a couple of weeks, we'll have a report on this. So what's the dosage? And is it different than what you would do if you were like doing the 3-day panicure treatment?
It's still 50 milligrams per kilogram once a day for 5 weeks. And like I said, it's definitely an off-label use because it's labeled for 3 days in the dog.
Right.
But there was a publication in 2002 about using it in this way. And if somebody wants to see the publication, I'm happy to share it. But just to be clear, it's 17-year-old protocol. So it's not like we're just starting to come up with this. Right. It's been around for a long time and it's been very effective.
Very, very cool. I appreciate that very much. And I am super excited for my worm-free puppies.
Right.
Have no idea how excited I am.
Well, good. And then there's a few other things we should talk about regarding management.
Yes.
So, you know, when you have people to come visit the puppies, which you probably will if they're going to be well socialized, you want to make sure that people are washing their hands with soap and water, not just using one of those hand sanitizers, because hand sanitizer doesn't kill parvo. Bleach and soap do. Mm-hmm. So hand cleansing and not wearing their outer clothing, putting maybe even a pair of booties on or making them take their shoes off.
When
they come into the home.
Yeah, I'm big on shoes off.
Yeah, you want to be really careful with that. If you do have an episode of diarrhea, you want to try to keep everybody as isolated as you can. So you don't have everyone traipsing through the same part of the house where the puppy or the dogs with diarrhea are. So you want to try to eliminate that. If you do have diarrhea, too, you need to first decontaminate. So that means clean up all the fecal material and then use a disinfectant that's appropriate. Bleach is still my favorite disinfectant for parvo and most puppies with diarrhea, although there's Rescue and there's chlorhexidine and there's Wishy Wash and there's a lot of really good products on the market.
Bleach is good. I am a huge believer in bleach.
Yes.
Like you, I lived through parvo. I believe in bleach.
And ASPCA has a bleach calculator on their website. So if you're using bleach, there's different strengths at the store. And different temperatures require different lengths of time that the bleach is in contact. So if you're in a cold environment, you want to make sure, you know, if the kennel's 45 or 50 degrees, you want to make sure that you're leaving it in contact for the right amount of time. So if you just go to type in bleach calculator ASPCA, you'll get that information.
Now, that's another good one.
See, I'm full of all kinds of things that you didn't know.
Dude, you're a genius. Did I mention how much I love my job and I love you and I love these opportunities? Everyone I talk to teaches me something. And that is my happy place. So I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your time.
So we'll get these links on website.
Yes, we'll have lots of links. I want a link to the bleach calculator. That's so cool.
Yeah, and different bleach. And then there's also bleach that isn't really bleach, you know, the stuff that you can put in laundry.
Right.
So make sure if you buy bleach that you're actually buying bleach.
Bleach.
The real stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I recognize and I value and I honor the people who are committed to keeping their dogs as free of chemicals as they can. But I think, as you have said in other instances, and you can speak to this on your own, but what's the greater good? Kill the bugs or not?
Right. Right. And dogs get pretty sick from these things, so we want to be careful.
Yeah.
So diet change can be helpful with diarrhea. If you've got a problem, there are some really good, highly digestible diets on the market. That, you know, hamburger and rice will be fine for the first 12 hours. But once you get to the vet, you really want to get some of the prescription diets that are made for GI disease because they do resolve the diarrhea more quickly than hamburger and rice will. And kaopectate is a big deal. Kaolin and pectin is a veterinary product. You can buy it at the farm store in a gallon. You can buy it online in a gallon. But if you buy the human stuff, it's not kaolin and pectin. It may say kaopectate on the label, but that product actually metabolizes into aspirin in the intestinal tract. So it's anti-inflammatory. But I don't like aspirin in my dogs that are nursing puppies. I don't like it in my pregnant dogs, and I don't like it in my newborn puppies. So I really use just good old kaolin and pectin. You can buy a gallon of that for $12. It's going to last you the rest of your life.
Nice. That's another good one. Everybody says kaopectate, not Pepto-Bismol or whatever, but this is a great hint.
Yeah, it's different. changed it a few years ago. I don't know how they managed to change it without telling you that they changed it, but if you read the back of the label,
yeah,
the pink stuff isn't what it used to be.
Interesting. And fiber. A lot of people use pumpkin.
Yep. Pumpkin is great. Metamucil is great. The stuff with, you know, real actual fiber, you don't want to substitute something like Miralax because that's an insoluble product and that's going to give you diarrhea. But the fiber in Metamucil works really well. Pumpkin, you know, there's a lot of good ways that you can do this. There's soluble fiber, there's insoluble fiber, but fiber in general helps because it actually holds the water or the fluid in the stool so that there's some substance and it keeps the dogs from straining and feeling really uncomfortable when they pass stool. So it's a great product.
Excellent. And we talked about our probiotics and we talked about our worming protocol.
Right.
And we talked about not using metronidazole in baby puppies.
Yeah. And there are times you're going to have to reach for metronidazole, but it's really pretty overused. And we should be careful that we're not putting every dog that we have a problem with diarrhea on antibiotics, because actually what we're doing is taking the intestinal bacterial flora and messing with it. So we should avoid those if we can at all possible. Thailand, metronidazole. There's a few products that you and I used to use in the dog show world that are no longer on the market. But we do want to be really careful. And metronidazole is easy to develop a toxicity, especially in the MDR1 dogs and really young dogs, because it does cross the blood-brain barrier and it can give you neurologic disease to the point of seizures. It can be really serious if you're not dosing it carefully. So don't just pull metronidazole off the shelf and shove it down the dog like it's candy, because it has some significant side effects. And I've seen multiple cases of metronidazole toxicity over my course of my career. So it is toxic if it's given in too large a dose. And the therapeutic range is really narrow. It's dosed at sometimes as high as 50 milligrams per kilogram in the therapeutic dose. And if you get to 65 milligrams per kilogram, it's toxic. So that's a tiny margin of safety. And if you're not weighing your patients and really carefully calculating the dose, it's really easy to overdose it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a personal experience with that as well. So yes, absolutely. And realistically, antibiotics are for bacteria, and unless we have a very specific bacteria, let's go back to our things that can be wrong, right? If we have a bacterial infection and we need an antibiotic, what are better solutions?
Well, a culture is a great idea. So if you've got a case of diarrhea that you can't get figured out, send fecal cultures to the lab and you can find things like E. coli, Campylobacter, Shigella, Salmonella, Clostridium. Once you identify the specific bacteria, then you can identify which antibiotic is going to be your best bet. Frequently, erythromycin is one of the drugs of choice, but it can cause vomiting and diarrhea. So, again, you want to be really certain that you're on track. A lot of people use Thailand, which has some advantages. But, again, you're starting to mess around with bacterial flora again. So I try to manage these guys without using drugs when it's possible, other than Taolin and Pectin, which is really clay.
Right.
Fiber, probiotics, and an appropriate diet. So a lot of times we can get through these situations with a more appropriate treatment than just reaching for an antibiotic off the shelf every time that a dog has a little loose stool.
Okay. Well, that, I think, has covered the poopy from top to bottom.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, poopy happens, and go Packers.
For sure.
For sure. Thank you, Marty. I appreciate it.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.